Hello, everybody. Welcome back into your latest episode of Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, your host, Evan Sider, and joined by co-host Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Just for our Locked On Suns Twitter page, you're an RA at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support there is very much appreciated, as always. We have a new title sponsor for our show today. We're going to talk more about that at the end of the first segment today, Rock Auto. Go ahead and check out Rock Auto. They have a lot of great stuff to offer. We're going to tell you more about the end of the first segment here. And also Built Bar as well, the best tasting protein bar on the open market. Go ahead and go to BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON. You get $10 off your first order of Built Bars. Brent, this could be a fun episode today because it's been a minute since we've done one of these. I think probably a month or so, maybe even more than that, honestly, since we dove into the draft a little bit. I know the NCAA season didn't actually end up happening going through. We didn't see March Madness, unfortunately, due to coronavirus, but we saw a lot of these players have had a chance over the last few weeks to go back and actually dive into this big board that I'm working on. A lot of Suns draft guys, because we're getting closer to the draft. I know they got pushed back a little bit. It seems like they're going to go the route of probably in the early fall, maybe August, September, we're going to see the draft. Who knows? They don't have an exact date just yet, but a lot of interesting names. I know we were talking before about this is a weak draft class, but there's actually some specific fits on this big board of these Suns prospects that makes sense for this team.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about, I think we've tried to, at least here in the hiatus, look into the draft from the perspective of what the Suns, what we learned from last year, what the Suns specifically might be looking to do and maybe not be quite so caught off guard the next time. The next time the draft comes around, whenever that might be. So yeah, we're going to talk about some names here today that maybe you should keep an eye on, read into a little bit more. I think we are going to start seeing workouts and that type of thing at some point here. Teams are going to have to sort of do double duty, I think, at some point in the summer, because the offseason is going to be pretty compressed. So we might see the draft happen like right after, like, you know, the day after the finals or something like that, rather than the more spread out thing we normally get. So I want to dive into some of those names. I also do just want to like make everybody aware that's listening that might feel like this show is hitting home in it or is landing in a little bit of a different way today. We totally get that. The stuff going on in the world is far more important than the Suns draft board. And I definitely understand that. I would draw people's attention to the words Monty Williams wrote in his op-ed over at The Athletic about his viewpoints. He's doing a press conference with us here in the local media today where we'll get to hear from him more. So hopefully we can give the Suns figureheads their voice through our show when the time comes. But I didn't want anyone to think we were completely blind to what's going on. So I just wanted to get that out there. But you can start us off, Evan, or if you have anything else to say on that, or start us off with the big board. It was mostly names that you came up with, and I couldn't really find any that I could add necessarily. So you can have the floor.
Yeah, and I appreciate you saying those words. And everyone out there, be safe with what's going on. I know it's a crazy time we're living in, and it really is a time that we should just look at each other and just be thankful that we're still around and thankful that we have people around each other that have a support system. So everyone out there is listening to this. Hope you guys are staying safe. And we're going to dive in now, like you mentioned, Brent, into the big board here, because the Phoenix Suns, like you mentioned, they kind of have a type. I mean, at least through one draft, we kind of know what James Jones likes a little bit as far as being more experienced players, guys who really know their role. They're not really projects, so to say. And I feel like this one, I'm going to start off here with an intriguing one. And he's the only big on the list here, the only power forward I have here, because he's probably the hot name on this list, the one who was the 2019-20 Naismith Award winner, Obi Toppin. He might be a player who's right outside the Suns' range. They do end up making the playoffs, so they end up being in the late lottery. But Obi Toppin, I think if the Suns jump up in the lottery, if Toppin slips a little bit, I think he makes sense. I know the defense fits a little questionable there, but I can't help but imagine the possibilities with Ayton and Toppin running side-by-side in transition.
In some ways, I think Toppin fits the identity of this team pretty well. Like, I think there's things you look at, you know, to me, I've sort of adjusted my perspective on DeAndre Ayton a little bit over the course of the season in good ways and bad. It's not even just a negative of, you know, the fact that I don't think his jump shot, his 3-point shot especially, is going to come as quickly as we all expected. But I think on the other side, I'm much more bullish on his defense. So I think Toppin is not a perfect fit, but maybe no one is with a center like Ayton that is a little bit of a not, I don't want to say dying breed because he is such a unique talent and an athlete, but you're going to have some building problems with Ayton no matter who you put next to him, I guess is the best way to, that I can say it. So Toppin, much better, much more trustworthy shooter to me than like a Dario Saric type of guy. I know Toppin has a little bit of a hitch in his shot, but he did get run off screens. Like he can shoot off movement and he can attack closeouts here and there a little better than Dario, I think, just because of his athleticism and that type of thing. So better fit offensively than anybody we've seen play next to Ayton so far during his career. And yeah, the defense is going to be a question mark, but I think Ayton made so many strides and started to really fulfill his potential on that side of the ball that to me, that's not as much of a concern as it might have been in the past. You need somebody with a little bit of that more athletic upside and versatility than a Dario Saric, but I don't think you need to be finding some sort of stopper at the four spot to like make up for what DeAndre Ayton is. So we saw Toppin protect the rim pretty well. He can switch, but he's very high center of gravity. You'll see him kind of wobble around out there, lock his knees sometimes. So that stuff's going to be a problem, but I think he's somebody you could at least find 20 or so minutes a game to play alongside Ayton. And I think we've gone over before all the connections between the coaching staff over at Dayton. Their head coach was on the assistant staff alongside Monty and Mark Bryant and Darko Rajakovic in Oklahoma City when they were all together. So that still to me, Toppin, you know, depending on where the Suns land in the lottery, I think he almost has to be number one, if not like tied for number one right now.
Yeah, Toppin's averages last year for Dayton, 20 points, 7.5 rebounds, 2.2 assists, and 1.2 blocks per game. And his advanced stats too, true shooting percentage of 68.4, only 28 usage percentage, which I think is a very elite number. And yet he had the second best box plus minus in his draft class. James Wiseman had the number one, but he only played a few games. So really, Obi Toppin was the most impactful from a box plus minus standpoint this past year in college basketball. I ended up winning that Naismith Award, like I mentioned at the top of the show there. I think another thing that's in the cards with Obi Toppin is 22. If they start the season December, January area, Brennan, he'll be close to 23 years old by the time the season starts. So that's another feather in the cap of Toppin, where you saw Cam Johnson last year, really experienced, maybe not the elite high floor, but you know exactly what he's going to be right away. What do you think about Toppin in that sort of role where, like you mentioned, he'll probably come off the bench, I imagine, next year, unless he really impresses them and he ends up being a starter alongside DeAndre, which I don't think would happen right away. But what do you think about Toppin and just the way he'd fit in this Phoenix system? Because I think he'd be able to do almost everything that Dario could, and maybe not a better passer, but I think he can learn that.
Sure. And I think eventually, you know, this year was a little bit of a different story because I think you needed some capable veteran playmakers on this roster to make the type of offense Monty Williams wanted to install work. You know, you needed Dario's playmaking. Even Aaron Baines with his screening and just dribble handoff game could be a ball mover, a guy who keeps the offense going. I think over time we need to start thinking, at least in my opinion, about Booker. What does this offense look like when it's almost entirely being run through Booker and Ayton? What type of point guard makes sense in that situation? How much more shooting do you need to add? What does the defense need to, what type of defensive pieces do you need to put together to maximize the fact that you're going to have these two high usage guys? Because I do think Ayton will get to that point as he expands his range, as he becomes a better shot creator. So yeah, Toppin's not much of a playmaker, but at the same time, their offense did operate pretty similarly to, I think, what Monty wants to install. It's not a coincidence. These guys have worked together in the past. I think they see basketball in much the same way. Toppin was really like a five for Dayton, more of a rim runner, where they had Ryan Mikesell be more of a floor spacer. So Toppin was really like the pick and roll dive man a lot of the time, or a pick and pop guy, cutting, posting up, things like that. So I think he can fit. I think he'd be pretty interchangeable with Ayton as the offense goes more toward a Booker Ayton type of thing. I would agree he'll probably come off the bench this year. Not to go too long on Toppin, maybe we can get another quick hitter or jam-pack the last couple of segments here, but I had one more question because I'm thinking about it now that we're talking about Toppin again. Do you think where I am with a lot of these fours that we're talking about, whether it's in free agency, which I know Suns fans have just continued to equivocate on Twitter over the past several weeks is, are they better enough than what we saw from Oubre and Bridges? Like, is putting Obi on this team a better long-term solution at the four spot than starting Bridges and Oubre, or at least closing with Bridges and Oubre? I think that's the line that you're going to need to have these players cross if you're going to put capital into acquiring them. And to be honest, I'm not sure Obi is good enough. I don't know if he makes as much sense to me at that four spot next to Bridges and Ayton than Kelly Oubre does.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point to bring up there. And I imagine, like, internally they're debating that, just how they see the Oubre Bridges fit. I mean, we saw it on the court this past year, the five-man lineup of Rubio, Booker, Bridges, Oubre, and Ayton was a plus 20.2 net rating and a 250-plus minutes. There's a very good sample size of this being a very conducive front court with Oubre and Bridges and Ayton kind of gobbling up most of the rebounds there, which he already is an elite rebounder, one of the best rebounders in the NBA there. But I do think it's a legitimate question about whether Toppin would fit in that system, because we see already that Oubre and Bridges can fit well together. And you wonder with Toppin defensively, I don't think he's a better defensive player than Kelly Oubre, honestly. He's less versatile. He doesn't really, I don't know if he's going to be able to cover wings and these ball handlers like he would be with like Kelly or McHale.
Not as athletic.
Yeah, exactly. It gives you a lot more, maybe putting yourself in a box, so to say, if you do add Obi Toppin on this roster and what you do with Kelly Oubre moving forward here. Because I think if they do draft Toppin, it means one of Kelly or McHale is not long for the Suns team, I imagine, in a year or two. And that's just an interesting question. You know, and like you mentioned, we're going to dive in more to others on this list. I had it. I was ball handlers, wings, and bigs. The only big on the list here is Obi Toppin. So we could dive here in the ball handlers or wings next time if you want to.
Yeah, let's do that. And we can start off in the next segment with some of the wings and maybe how they fit into what maybe a more small ball oriented version of this group might be going forward. We have a few of those to go through, so we can do that in segment two. Before that, though, I want to tell you guys a little bit more about Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes, whether it's Fiat, Kia, Ford, or models, you know, every year, all the trim packages that each of these dealers and manufacturers try to give you. And it's impossible to even narrow down to buy one, let alone once you get the car, where do you buy parts? Which parts do you buy? Does this go with my EX model, or do I need to buy this other, like even something down to a windshield wiper, let alone a part of your engine or internal system that makes the thing go? So I think back to like when I was growing up, when all of us were dragging by without modern technology, like you'd have to go to these stores and flip through these massive like phone book type things to find, okay, here's my Kia, here's 2009, here's whatever. And then you'd go buy the part and then just cross your fingers and pray that it was the right one. So Rock Auto solves all of that. One reason to repair and maintain your cars is to save money that you can use for more important things like your mortgage or food or, you know, heaven knows what else with how much of a struggle people are having right now. So don't choose to spend 30% or 50% for the exact same auto parts at a chain store or a dealership. I mean, heaven, please do not go to a dealership for this stuff. Use Rock Auto. Log on to rockauto.com. They are basically a database. They are going to give you the information you need and show you the cheapest price for your part and where to buy it, whether that is through them most of the time or how to get it if not. So Rock Auto's prices are the same for everybody and reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices available rather than changing the prices based on what the market looks like. RockAuto.com is for everybody and doesn't require a membership or even a login. They don't take your information and spam you. They just give you what you need to know and how to save money. They're also a family business, and they have hundreds and hundreds of manufacturers. You trust me, this is the place you want to go. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and easy to navigate. I was poking around yesterday when we found out that this awesome company was sponsoring us. And trust me, I have a 2012 Hyundai Elantra that I increasingly need to do more and more service on, and I know I've spent too much on a lot of this stuff. So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so that they know we sent you. You know, they'll have that drop down menu. It's like online, social media, newspaper, whatever. Just write in Locked On so that they know we sent you. Take advantage of their amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. Okay, so let's dive into the wings here. We've talked about Aaron Nesmith. I'll mention him again. I don't know if we need to dive in too much. I would point people to my Forbes page where I wrote about Aaron Nesmith, I think in the beginning of May, if I'm remembering correctly, maybe the end of April. I got to see Vandy play a game in Phoenix this year, talk to Jerry Stackhouse, talk to Aaron Nesmith. Incredible shooter, shot almost 50% from the three-point line this year. And that's a little bit of an outlier. No one's expecting him to be a 50% three-point shooter because there are none of those players in the NBA. But I think it's just his jumper is really trustworthy. He's big. Not only is he just chiseled physically and can use that strength a little bit on defense, but he's tall. He's a tall wing who doesn't sacrifice much in the way of nimbleness moving. And I think he's really like a plug-and-play guy. He's a sophomore, but plays beyond his years and really got a lot added to his plate, Evan, at Vanderbilt this year under Jerry Stackhouse. Last year, Scott Drew was the coach. This year, Jerry Stackhouse comes in and really tries to revolutionize the program, make it much more pro-oriented and professional in general, and basically tasks Nesmith with, you're the best player from last year's team, and you're going to be our leader, and you're going to add a lot more on both sides of the ball to what you're doing. And so I was really impressed with him. Injury ended his season early, but I think he's somebody the Suns will look long and hard at. Character boxes checked and the shooting boxes checked for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. He'll be 21 years old to start next season. He averaged 23 points, 5 rebounds, and over almost a block and 1.5 steals per game. So like you mentioned, he can also contribute on both ends of the court as far as being a good, solid two-way defender and being a sharpshooter. Like you mentioned, 50%, played in the about 15 or so games, 69 true shooting percentage this past year, only 26 usage percentage. So it really shows you he can be a sharpshooter in that kind of Cam. Maybe I think he's actually more well-rounded as far as being able to do a lot more than from looking at Cam Johnson last year. So I think he is a more complete player than Cam was, because we know Cam is a sharpshooter. He's a smart player, but I think Nesmith gives a little bit more on both ends of the court. And like you mentioned, I think it makes a lot of sense here. And he could even play 2 through 4, in my opinion. He could be Devin Booker's backup shooting guard next year if he wanted to be. Or he could play the 3. He could play small ball 4-2, be that in that Cam Johnson type of role, where he saw some really super small ball lineups last year. And Nesmith really slide into that alongside Cam or Mikal or Kelly. I talked about this before on my Twitter, as far even goes for guys like we're going to talk about later in the segment, other wings. But adding another wing on this roster, and I know some listeners might scoff at that, Brandon, but the more wings, the merrier in today's NBA. And I feel like complimentary – wise, Nesmith really does fit well at those 3 on the roster already.
I don't see any problem with adding more wings. I mean, like you said, the more the merrier, just kind of as a general proposition. I think that's totally agreeable. You look at how Boston has built their roster. I think that's the best example I can think of. Even the Clippers this year, they had 2 all-NBA caliber wing players in Kawhi and Paul George, and they go trade for another one, trade a first round pick for another one in Marcus Morris. I think if you're willing to be creative and you're willing to get different types of complementary wings, there's really no limit to how many of them can be on the floor at once. I mean, you could see 5 wings on the floor at once. I mean, plenty of teams are already doing that. So avoiding it just because of a positional overlap, I think, is poor planning. I mean, I think that was a lot of the reason last offseason why the Suns got so much criticism for clearing out TJ Warren and Josh Jackson at the expense of real assets. Is it's like, well, why can't these try to make it work? You know, don't operate at a behind position. So yeah, I would say to me, like, Nesmith is 6'6". Devin Vassell is 6'6", I think, as well. Obi Toppin himself is only 6'9", who we talked about in the last segment. So he's much more of a modern sort of 4-5 combo guy than even what we normally would think of as a power forward. So I think all of them would work in that situation. And I just like Nesmith because he does have that size. I think he has more of that Cam Johnson type of positional versatility, whereas Devin Vassell, I think, is a little bit more, he's not quite as filled out physically. So I think we can maybe pivot to him. And he's gotten a lot of comparisons to Mikal Bridges from a defensive perspective. I think his length and instincts and mobility are all pluses. I think he'd be a real difference maker on the wing defensively next to Devin Booker. But I guess, where do you stand on the idea of acquiring different sorts of players? And do you think, like, could you envision a world where, like, him and Mikhail and Kelly are all playing on the floor together? Or I guess what kind of things do you think you'd have to keep in mind from a roster building perspective if you did want to take a chance on the Florida State product?
Yeah, Devin Vassell was one of those players I went back and watched this week and last week as well. And I kind of fell in love with him the more I watched him because, like you mentioned, he did remind me a bit of Mikhail. He's a good shooter as well, 41.5% on threes. And he attempted almost 3.5 per game this past year. Career 41.7% from three in his two seasons at Florida State. Took on a bigger role this year for the Seminoles as well. Only played 10 minutes per game last year, up to 29 full-time starter this year. He averaged 12.7 points, 5 rebounds, 1.6 assists, 1.4 steals, and 1 block per game. So if you add in the stocks, the steals and the blocks, he's one of the best in this class. And I think he does fit. Looking long-term for a second, Brandon, if we're talking about a future where after Ricky Rubio's contract is up, they go Devin Booker in the James Harden role full-time, he's in that point book sort of role, I think Vassell fits that perfectly. You could have Booker at the 1, Vassell at the 2, Kelly and Mikhail at the 3 and the 4, and Aiden at the 5. That seems like a really modern switchable lineup where you have 2 through 4 just creating havoc defensively, and you have Booker and Aiden as the high usage guys.
Agreed. I think that's where I would be thinking, or at least giving myself more options. I think one of the problems with this year's roster for the Suns was they really only had one type of way that they could effectively win games. I know they had different rosters throughout the year and they won plenty of things, but in plenty of different circumstances. But my point is their signature wins mostly came the same type of way. You had turnover creating, athletic defensive performances, hot shooting night, and usually Devin Booker going off. That was a recipe for success for this team. I'd like to see them double down on that, maximize what worked. And Vassell, defensively, we've covered, and he also was a great spot up shooter, you know, both seasons at Florida State. Obviously got more opportunity as a sophomore, but he shot 42% both seasons. He started taking more and his efficiency didn't dwindle at all. And then from the free throw line, which is historically a better indicator even than 3-point percentage for college players, he considerably improved. He got to the line more often and made more of them, finished 74% as a sophomore. So I think he'd be a great addition to the team. I do want to mention, too, before we finish out our wing segment here, the other thing with Boston or whoever you want to pick from a team-building perspective, piling up these wing players, is they're valuable to other teams, too. So, you know, I don't like to think of drafting a player just with the intention of trading them, and I don't think any team should act that way, but adding more of a position that's super valuable in the NBA is never going to hurt you if you manage it the right way. You can trade these guys. You can condense them into one player. You can do a number of things. You can get creative and have lineup versatility to put these kind of unorthodox lineups on the floor. And I think Vassell fits into that. The last guy we wanted to talk about was Sadiq Bey from Villanova, sophomore as well. Another guy like Neesmith and Vassell, who I think was pretty hot from three this year. I don't know if that's something you can expect to continue at 45% where Bay was, but another guy who improved from the free throw line, another guy who's even bigger at 6'8 with legitimate size. I really like him. I think we know the Suns have historically really respected that Villanova program. What are your thoughts on Bay?
Yeah, I went back and watched him too, and he's almost like Mikhail, so to say. He's not nowhere close to the defender that Mikhail was, but just the lankiness, the size he has for his position, and he's a quick release shooter. There's really no issues or hiccups in his shot release. He's able to do a lot on the floor. He can put the ball on the floor and dribble and go to the basket. He's a lot more than just being a spot-up shooter, and like you mentioned, Bay this past year, he took on a much bigger role, nearly double his usage percentage, and he's averaged 16 points, 4.7 rebounds, 2.4 assists, along 0.8 steals and 0.4 blocks per game. So not really much of a wing defender, or because you already have Kelly McKelly who could do that for you, but almost like Cam Johnson, so to say, where he's just an elite shooter, 50% from the field this past year from two-point range, and like you mentioned, 45.1% from three-point range. In conference, it was up to 48.7%, which is pretty incredible that he was able to put that up at 7 threes per game. 60-plus true shooting percentage as well, 60.8 true shooting, and his three-point attempt rate was nearly 50% throughout his career. So it's almost like Cam Johnson, to say. He kind of filled up that same role, but I think you can't have enough Cam Johnson. We saw how reliable Cam was this past year and how valuable the Suns really view shooting as, and the space in the four, especially for a player like DeAndre Ayton, who you don't know if he's gonna be able to space the four himself in his career. He might just be a jump shooter in the mid range and an inside guy for his career. And if you want to surround Ayton with more of that space, and like Orlando did with Dwight Howard back in the day, I think Bay and Cam Johnson alongside Oubre and Bruce sort of accomplished that.
I agree. I think Bay is a little different than the rest of these guys. Like you said, a little bit more of a shot creator for himself and his teammates, more so than a necessarily like defensive stopper type guy. You know, I think his steal percentage and block percentage were really nothing special, but assist rate pretty high for a guy his size at 6'8", playing the wing, and was able to increase his assist rate without really turning the ball over all that much more from his freshman to his sophomore year. So he's a guy that I admittedly need to watch more of. I watched a little bit of Villanova here and there this year, but didn't focus on him enough. So hopefully when we talk about the draft next, he's a guy I can give a little more on.
Yeah, Bay is definitely one of the more intriguing guys. I think Villanova, like you mentioned, Brennan, James Jones and the Suns organization, they pounded the tail from Mikal Bridges. They saw what Jay Wright did to him and helped develop him. And I think they could see the same thing with Sadiq Bay if they do go back into the Villanova well and draft him in the upcoming 2020 NBA draft. Before we go on to our final segment here, dive into the ball handlers here. We have two on the list here. We really do fit that sort of mold of, if the future with no Ricky Rubio, who could really take his spot? And I think these two guys make a lot of sense for that. I want to remind you guys about our sponsor today's show, which is Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. It's a protein bar that tastes just like a candy bar. It's 16 amazing flavors, 8 chocolate nut flavors, and 8 chocolate nut free flavors. The bar is covered in 100% chocolate, and they're soft and easy to chew. The Built Bar is a great for a health conscious guy as well. You're able to lose and maintain well while indulging in a delicious treat, like a peanut butter brownie, for example. 20 grams of protein in that with only 3 grams of sugar and only 170 calories, which is a great combination for you to stay pretty much full throughout the day. If you want to chew on some Built Bars, I know Brent and I have had our fair share of Built Bars already, and we love them. We're going to reorder more after we get off this show because we just love them that much. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON. You get $10 off your first order of Built Bars. Use promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. Again, that's BuiltBar.com, BuiltBar.com. Suns fans, go take advantage of this offer right away. All right, we are back for our final segment here, Brennan, talking through our pseudo big board. So we're going to dive in more and more as we get closer to the draft here. But for a tease to our listeners out there for this upcoming draft, who knows when it'll be, August, September, whenever it will be. This college season, there was a lot of intriguing prospects on the board. We've gone through the bigs, Obi Toppin, the wings of Devin Vassell, Sadiq Bey, and Aaron Nesmith. But for our final segment here, going to the ball handlers, maybe looking sort of into the future post-Ricky Rubio, I think these two guys we're going to talk about here make a lot of sense. Do you want to start off with Tyrese Haliburton of Iowa State or Killian Hayes of France?
Killian Hayes is an interesting one. He's a guy that I really liked the first time that I watched him. I think just his offensive, his ability to create his own shot, the pull-up three, his size, his finishing ability, his fluidity of motion, even though he's not like an explosive athlete that's going to dunk over, you know, three guys. He's a functional athlete in that he can get to his spots, and just at his age to be, I think he's just 19, competing in a professional league, doing what he did was pretty impressive. I know he took a step back from the French league to the German league, but still, there's something to be said for that competition versus, you know, some of these like mid-major colleges that guys can just dominate. So he's somebody I really liked, and I do think there's kind of like Obi Toppin, a little bit of a defensive concern. A lot of the other players we've talked about are more capable defenders. I just get nervous anytime you start talking about a guy like Hayes, putting him next to Devin Booker in a backcourt, you start to get just behind the eight ball as a defensive roster pretty quickly.
Yeah, and that's a good point bring up there. Hayes is 6'5", 187. He averaged 12 points per game, 5.4 assists, and 1.5 steals per game this past year for Radefarm Ulm in Germany. I think the upside, I think, with Killian Hayes is if he hits that ceiling, I think he has a super high ceiling in this class. He could be that primary ball hunter. But also, I think alongside the Devin Booker and Phoenix, you have to remember, from at least what John Gambadoro told us last year, they loved Kobe White. They're going to take him if they weren't going to be able to get that trade they had with Dario and Cam Johnson. I do wonder if maybe a guy like Killian Hayes fits that mold like a Kobe White, where he could play on and off ball, he could share duties with Devin Booker and grow into that role. I mean, he's 18 and a half years old right now. He'll be 19 right after the draft ends. And I think that he is a player who could be a project, learn to Ricky Rubio for a year or two and take the reins, so to say. But from what they probably use Ilya Okobo sort of as a combo guard next to Devin Booker from time to time, I think Killian Hayes could be a lot more than Ilya Okobo is. And that upside, I think, is so intriguing with him.
How do you think James Jones would, or just this front office in general, would feel about a guy like this who is admittedly a little bit of a project? We know James Jones and the scouting staff went out into the world a little bit more during the season to go scout, including at least one trip overseas. I don't know if they saw Hayes, but they were out there watching. We know Balmaro for sure, but 18 and a half from a kind of a mediocre European league, a guy who I think is going to be a little bit of a project. Do you think that's the type of player they pulled the trigger on? Seems like McDonough might have. I'm a little more skeptical that Jones would.
Yeah, that's a good point to bring up there too, because I do have concerns, or not concerns so to say, but maybe some qualms about if the Suns do take a player like Killian Hayes, because he will take at least a year to season in the NBA. I think the transition for him is going to be very interesting to watch going against NBA athletes. He really didn't see much of that.
Probably a lot of G League.
Yeah, a lot of G League I can imagine for him. And I think that's the smart way to go about with a player like Killian Hayes. I know the Suns under McDonough were kind of scared, so to say, to put a Dragon Bender or Marquise Chris into the G League just for outside voices. Maybe it would be a bad look from the outside. But I think we saw this past year where the Suns, Ty Jerome went down there a couple of times as well. Ilya Okobo did as well. Anthony Melton last year. I think there's a good way to utilize that. And I think the Suns now know. We had the chance to speak to the Northern Arizona Suns GM on here this past month and talking about how they want to keep using it more like a farm system. And you could really use Killian Hayes in that sense. But I do wonder if they have the patience for that, Brent, because I know this roster is pretty filled out. We kind of know what they need. And if they do well in free agency, maybe you could take sort of a home run swing with Killian Hayes and maybe say, all right, our roster is pretty complete at this point. We already have our core. And if Hayes hits, it's just a bonus.
That's true. You know, maybe if they do go forward next year with less question marks, with fewer question marks, they can, you know, feel a little bit more okay about a swing for the fences in the draft. Maybe that's how this plays out. I do just, you know, it's funny because you said like we know exactly what they need. Well, I think Hayes is almost to a T the type of guy they need. It's just he's not going to be that player in the immediate term. So are you willing to deal with that? Drafting a player who's not going to contribute right away. And I guess, yeah, it's all going to be sort of connected. If they are pretty active in free agency, maybe the draft isn't necessarily a place they feel like they need to get an instant contributor. It's just last year they were so dead set on getting contributors in the draft that it would be surprising, I think, to see them pivot so quickly. Another guy that we did not, maybe we don't need to spend so much time on is Tyrese Haliburton, the player we've talked about a couple of times, I think, on this show. Looking at the draft during this hiatus, but another pretty similar guy, size 6'5 playmaker, good spot up shooter, very unorthodox jump shot, but it's worked for him at the free throw line this year, 82% as well, only 45 attempts, but nevertheless, and took on more playmaking responsibilities this year. He was like a combo guard who never really handled the ball as a freshman. And then this year, really took over a pretty terrible Iowa State team, also got injured to finish out his season, but showed, I think, scouts pretty much everything they would want to see from he's the type of guy where he went back and it made sense for him, right? Like he got to show different things to NBA decision makers that he wasn't able to as a freshman. So I think the concern for me with him would just be his ceiling. Like, what do you think is the best case scenario? What can Haliburton get better at, or what value would he add in the NBA that he wasn't able to in college that would make him worthy of like a top 10 pick?
Yeah, that's a good question because he's very scheme specific. And as far as fit, wherever he lands in this draft, he's not the elite defender De'Anthony Melton was, but he's pretty darn close looking at their college numbers here. Melton was 4.0 steal percentage, 3.9 block percentage. What's that block percentage is still insane to see from a point guard in college level. But I think Tyrese Haliburton, kind of overriding the mistake the Suns made of letting De'Anthony Melton go, I think was a great fit on this roster. Haliburton, 3.8 steal percentage, 2.0 block percentage. Like you mentioned, doubled his usage percentage and put up even better numbers this past year. His efficiency didn't drop off at all. I think it could be sort of like a better version of De'Anthony Melton where you don't really have the shooting question, so to say. Haliburton last past year shot 42% from three on over 5.5 attempts per game, career 42.6% three-point shooter. I think he's sort of like a more refined version of De'Anthony Melton, Brent. I feel like that player we always fawned over this when he was on the roster last year, how good he fit next to Booker, and only some nights where his defense took over. I think Haliburton could really be a version of that with more offensive twist to him.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and add this one to my homework list, I guess, to really focus in on his defense, because the numbers are really good. 3.8 steal percentage, 2.0 block percentage. Those basically stayed pretty static across his two seasons, which is good to see too. Less of an outlier added to his usage rate. This is like the type of sophomore season, sophomore season, De'Anthony Melton never actually played in his second season, that we would have wanted to see from Melton. So I like that comparison. I just need to look more at his defense, because Melton is just such a, he's just a genius defensive player, you know, and he's even smaller than Haliburton and is able to still make an impact and translated right away to the NBA. So I will watch Halliburton's defense more closely. If you can get a legitimate spot up shooter and secondary playmaker and defensive player with size like Haliburton next to Booker, I think in theory it's perfect. He's just such a non-traditional player that he's really going to need a second, third, fourth, fifth look from these teams before they pull the trigger on him.
I think before we close the show, Brennan, I think it's fair to ask about Ricky Rubio and the mentorship role he play for a Killian Hayes or a Tyrese Haliburton, because I think either one of those players that drafted the Phoenix to be the backup point guard, I think they're in a great situation, because we've been around Ricky all the time this year. He's such a genuine guy. He loves the team. He loves helping out players. He's a true leader on this team. I feel like if it's Haliburton, Hayes, or another point guard on this roster that's added in this summer, I think you're going to a perfect situation to learn from a player like Ricky Rubio. And I feel like Haliburton or Hayes will really exponentially grow learning from Rubio.
We didn't really get to see it much this year, so I agree with you. You know, they had young guards on the roster to some extent, but Ty Jerome was spotty in terms of availability and performance, wasn't even in Phoenix with the team for much of the season when it was all said and done. And so we didn't really get to see Rubio be that mentor. You know, I really think he spent most of his time installing values of professionalism and consistency and winning mentality to the other guys on the roster. We didn't really get to see it with the point guard. So I agree, you know, that's part of the value you signed Rubio for. And I think you can trust that he'll take that seriously. He's talked about it of his own accord plenty and plenty of times. So I don't think it would be bad to make that move now if possible and try to maximize the opportunity for your young point guard to learn. Maybe that's one of the ways that they talk themselves into a Killian Hayes, to go back to him, because, you know, transition as a Euro, probably a little bit easier when you have somebody like Ricky Rubio around, and just knowing that he's not going to learn bad habits, you're not going to have to put too much responsibility on his shoulders. I think that is an interesting perspective on it, and I'm sure we'll hear more about it in time. But yeah, Killian Hayes to me, he's a guy that I'm like trying to talk myself out of, because I don't want to be too high on him. But where do you have these guys? Do you have Hayes over and right versa?
Yeah, it's very close. Just based off upside alone, I do have Killian Hayes right above Tyrese Haliburton, but just off of right away.
You've liked Haliburton more than me this whole time. So
Yeah, they're very close, though. I'd probably honestly in the same tier. I just think Haliburton is a ready-made product. He fits the role we've talked about, the what fits next to Devin Booker the last couple of years. He checks all those boxes. And having Rubio alongside him, I think, makes a lot of sense there. So it's very close, but just based off the upside and what Hayes could be, I don't see a true star in Haliburton, but I see a true star in Hayes if he develops, right? So I have Hayes slightly above him.
All right. We'll probably have more to talk about to the season structure by the time we talk next. It's looking more and more like the Suns are headed to Orlando. That'll be fun to talk about on Friday.
Yeah, breaking news as we close here. Woj just tweeted the NBA 2015 model for July 31st proposed timeline, and that finals will be October 12th. So great news to talk about later on this episode. So, Brent, this has been a lot of fun. I know our listeners always enjoy talking about the draft. Back to you guys on Friday as we update you guys with the latest news about the Suns possibly going to the playoffs.